Today we're beginning on the top of Ted and Aleph, five lines down. Birmiya asked the Rabbi Zeira Rata. She had a sighting. Then only afterwards does it become apparent that she is pregnant. We already saw in the Mishnah on yesterday's daf that hukar ubra is the threshold at which she switches from mi'et le'et to dayashata when she is pregnant. So here the sighting happened before she actually was hukar ubra. Mao, what is the din over here? Kaven to be idna de chazai lo hukar ubra mitamyo. Since at the time she had the sighting, there was no hukar ubra, so she's clearly tamei lemafreya. Odilma, kaven to samuch la chazai, or maybe because it was close to that period of time, Rashi over here makes a statement of samuch l'riata miyad. Rashi has that extra factor that was juxtaposed to the moment she saw the dam was the hukar ubra. Seems to be that it was almost an immediate succession, not something where there's a delay in between. So Dilma came into samuch la chazai lo mitamyo, or maybe because the sighting was so close to the point of hukar ubra, there is no tuma. Now the question itself of the Gemara seems so strange. Whenever the chachamim establish a threshold, it's irrespective or irrelevant that you had something a little before or a little afterwards. The only question is, did you make the threshold or not? The way the Gemara phrases the question in many places is, you're going to tell me that a 40 sa'a mikveh is kosher, and 40 sa'a minus a kortov is not kosher? And the answer is yes, because that's the threshold amount. That's what the Chachamim said is the shi'ur. Once that's the shi'ur, below that shi'ur is no good. You cross that shi'ur, you're okay. So too over here, why would you think that just because she had a sighting before, according to Rashi, immediately before hukar ubra, that should change its status? So what some of the Rishonim do is point out that we saw before that hukar ubra was really a siman that she had reached the point in her pregnancy where the physiological aspects of the pregnancy now weighed on her seeing dam. We saw yesterday the idea that the physiological results of pregnancy are what cause the siluk adam, and it's not the pregnancy or the vitality of the pregnancy that matters. So maybe over here too, she started to have the symptoms of kovid rosh, ibarak, vedim, heavy-headed, heavy body feel, and those physiological symptoms started to come before she reached the threshold of hukar ubra. Then immediately afterwards, she has hukar ubra. That's evidence that what she was feeling right before was the results of the pregnancy and the physiological aspects of the pregnancy. So maybe we would say here that once hukar ubra comes around, it shows us that those physical manifestations beforehand were already the threshold. She had hit the threshold maybe a drop earlier. And that's the nature of the Gemara's question. Is it an absolute threshold? Or is the threshold indicating to us when the physiological appearance of these symptoms takes place? And now maybe that we know it, maybe we can even go back and say it really started a little earlier. Samalei, midu taima mishum derosha kaved ala vevira kavedim aleha. Isn't the whole reason because of the symptoms that she's going to see? Beidna dechazai en rosha kaved ala venevira kavedim ala. The time that she saw, she did not have those physical manifestations. So we just said maybe that's the nature of the question. So it means that she didn't have the full-fledged physiological symptoms. She started to have those feelings or sensations. So the question is, once she begins to have those sensations, is that enough to classify it as hukar ubra? Or do we need hukar ubra to know that she's reached that full status? And therefore, this is the only time that those physical symptoms are going to matter. And that's what he says in the end. In the end, it is the full-fledged physiological symptoms. And that only happens at the point of hukar ubra. Baimine hausava mi Rabbi Yochanan. So this elder asked Rabbi Yochanan, Higei vesta bimei ubura, velo badka mahu. What happens if she hits her cycle during the time of her pregnancy and she doesn't do a check? Kamai baile, and the Saba says, I'm asking the question in this context. Aliba de mandamar vestot doraita. According to the one who says that cycling is a doraita, a Torah prescribed requirement to check when you have a vesek. My, what's the din here? Given the vesto to uraita, since these are a Torah prescribed requirement by a bidika, therefore you must do bidika. Odilma, given the damem sulakim, lo by a bidika. Or maybe because she no longer has the sightings, because she is pregnant, maybe she no longer requires a bidika. So the way that Rashi phrases the question is that the requirement is that a woman check at the Shata Veset, the time that she normally expects her cycle, Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai. That's obviously not written in the Torah. It's something that is a Misora, Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai, because the Orach B'Zmanoba. We expect her to have a sighting of her menstrual cycle at the time that she normally sees it. And if the day that she's supposed to see it comes, and she doesn't check, we assume that she is Tamei, because we assume that she had the sighting with Kami Baile. Now the question is, she doesn't do that check. When she's pregnant, then what's the din? According to Rashi, the question is, what is the din if she didn't do what she's supposed to do? She's supposed to check. And she's supposed to check even when she is pregnant. That means that Mesulekit Damim does not solve your problem. You have a requirement to check, period. The only question here is, if you don't check, what is the implications of that? Normally, if you didn't check and it was your regular cycle, you'd be deemed Tmei'ah, because we would assume that you had your menstrual cycle when you expect it to happen. But now that she's Mesulekit Damim, that's where the Safek comes. Does she still have that same Chazakah, that Orach Bizmanoba? And if she fails to do the bidika, she is tmeya from that point forward. Or is she considered misulekat tamim and therefore not tmeya? So that's Rashi's view of what the question is. Many other Rishonim believe that that's the actual question of the Gemara. The question of the Gemara is, do you need to do a check when you are misulekat tamim? Rashi assumes you have to do it. Only question is, if you miss it, what happens? The other Rishonim say, what is the din here? When you already know that you're pregnant, you need to continue to check. And that's what the Gemara is asking. Since she normally has a cycle, she needs to check. Or because she's Mesulekat Damim, no need to check in this instance. That's the way they view the question. Amalei Tini Tua. It is a Tanaic statement. Rabbi Meir Omer. Imaita b'machbeh. If she was in hiding. Now, the hiding here is because they are enemies in the city. There's something that is very dangerous that's going on, and she's in hiding from that danger. And then she reaches the point in time where she would normally expect her cycle, and she doesn't do a check. Tehora. In that case, we don't assume that the dam came at its regular time. Shecharada misalekit et damim. Fear causes the cessation of the menstrual cycle, the known psychological phenomenon that has physiological impact, which is that if there is extreme fear in these situations, it can cause a suspension or a cessation of the menstrual cycle temporarily. And so here we assume that's what happened. So even though she didn't check, and obviously she didn't have any sensations, not seeing any dam, so we assume that there was no dam. Now, time of the Ika Charada. The reason that this is true is because she was in that state of fear. Haleka Charada. Had it not been that she was in a state of fear, v'igia vesta, and then she reached her normal point of her cycle, v'lo badka, and did not check, t'me'a. In that instance, she will be t'me'a. Alma, from here you see, vesto de'oraita. That a veset must be de'oraita, or that Rabbi Meir clearly believes that veset is de'oraita. And so if Rabbi Meir holds that veset is de'oraita, then Kevan de Ika Charada, the Mamisulakim. Now that she has a lack of dam because of the fear, and she's considered a Mesulekat Damim, below Bayi Bidika. And we don't require her to do a Bidika, because even when she misses the Bidika, we don't say that she is Tmeya. We say that she is Torah. Hachanami, so too in our case, the Mamisulakim. She does not have a expectation of dam here because of her pregnancy. Below Bayi Bidika. Therefore, she does not require Bidika. Now, for the way that the other Rishonim structure the Gemara, the proof is a little bit shaky, because the case by Charada, the case by fear, is a case bidiavad, which is she didn't check, and we say that she's still tohora because of the siluv damim. So then Rabbi Yochanan parlays that into saying, therefore, in the case of pregnancy, you don't need to check, which is a lechatchila statement. So how are you taking something that's a bidiavad situation and proving something lechatchila? That's what the other Rishonim are faced with. Rashi's explanation reads much more simply now, because Rashi's explanation is, if in the case where you're pregnant, where you still need to check by accident, or you didn't check, bidiavad, what is the situation? Then it matches, because now the case of Charada is bidiavad, and this is also bidiavad. Therefore, the proof from Charada is seemingly a good proof that bidiavad, if you don't do a check, you remain tohora, even though you were supposed to do a check. And similarly in the pregnancy, even though you're supposed to do a check, when you don't do it, you remain tehora. So now, in terms of the difference between vesto doraito and vesto derabanan, I'll just speak in broad terms because the Gemara is going to spend a lot of time on it when we get to the sugyot of vestot. But the difference between a veset doraita and a veset derabanan, by veset doraita, if she misses that bedika, we said over here that we assume that she is tmeya. If she's derabanan, if she misses her bedika and checks afterwards, our assumption is that if she finds herself tohora, that she still remains tohora because of the fact that, I mean, it's tushin midirabanan that she needs to check. But not that, that's an assumption that there's definitely going to be a sighting at that time. And therefore, if she finds herself tohora afterwards, then we assume that she was tohora. The bigger question comes up if she finds herself tmeya, which is that by doraita, if she finds herself tmeya, then we clearly view that retroactively it happened because we assume it came at the right time. But if vesto de drabanan, and she finds herself tmeya now, and the later check, the question is, what are the implications of that? Meaning that, does that mean she's tmeya prospectively? Because we're only checking because an institution rabbana, we don't really believe that so it's going to come then. Or is when she does it now, is that mareh retroactively that we assume she should have checked and it was there all along? So those are the questions that the Rishonim deal with, but we're going to deal with those when we get to the Sugyot of Vesto, but just be aware that those are the questions that arise in terms of the difference between Doraita and Dirabanan. Right, Tan Rabanan, Menika Shemet Bina B'toch 24 Chodesh. So Baraita, it's obviously playing off of our Mishnah, the difference between the Pshita, the Chachamim, and Rabbi Meir. If a child that was born passes away within the first 24 months, she gains the status like a regular woman now because clearly she's not nursing any longer. Therefore, she has retroactive tuma at any sighting. Therefore, from this, you would conclude that if she continued to nurse beyond the 24 months, 4 or 5 years, that she would continue to have the standing of prospective tuma, and not retroactive tuma, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, and it's clear from the way that the Braita lays out, that the determination as to whether a woman is considered misuleket damim or not misuleket damim with regards to nursing, is the question of whether you are or are not nursing. If you are nursing, you're misuleket damim, and therefore you're always dayashata, only prospective tuma. That can last for as long as you nurse. Even if you're nursing for 4 or 5 years, that's still going to be the case. On the other hand, if you stop nursing, then doesn't matter that you haven't reached the standard 24 months postpartum where people normally wean their child. Even if you did that earlier, then you're no longer considered misuleket damim. It's very clear. You're nursing, you're misuleket damim. You're not nursing, you're not misuleket damim. That's the view of Rabbi Meir. And that contributes to a shita that we saw in the Mishnah, that if she stops nursing early, there's no protection against the me'et le'et anymore. Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Dayan Shatan. In all these cases, Dayan Shatan, Kol Esrim V'Arba Chodesh. You get 24 months. It's a time-bound structure, not a nursing-driven structure. The Fikach, Imaita Meni Kato, Arba V'Chamesh Shanim, even if you're nursing for 4 or 5 years, mitama mi'et le'et, umifikida le'pikida, you can still be tamei retroactively, even though you are nursing. Nursing in of itself is not the factor. It is the postpartum physiological recovery, which takes 24 months, which is determinant as to whether you're Mesulekat Damim or not. So it's a fixed time. It's not about the nursing or not nursing. That is what the Rabbanan said in the Mishnah, that even if the child passed away, or she gave it to a wet nurse to nurse, she still gets 24 months, in which she's considered Dayashata, that it's prospective tuma. Just in terms of the medical side of this, it's very interesting only because women are so different. There's no standard time period after the birth in which a woman will begin to see her regular cycle. Even if she stops nursing postpartum, doesn't mean that she'll see her cycle at a fixed interval afterwards. It takes women different times for their cycle to return. Some of that's covered up with the, again, postpartum bleeding, which you can't even tell if she's having a cycle or not, but at least 6 to 8 weeks before they start a cycle. And even with that 6 to 8 weeks, it's very wide range of when a woman would begin to see again. If she does nurse, the same thing is true, that will take longer for her cycle to restart. But if she nurses even for a long period of time, it would not necessarily stop her cycle for all the time that she is nursing. It might cause it to delay, and that delay, again, is very subjective from woman to woman as to when it returns. So the truth is that it's really a mix of both of these items, but the Gemara here is parsing their machloket as to these two different items, which is, Shatim Salomar, the Divrei Rabbi Meir. So according to this, you can figure that Rabbi Meir's position is Dam Ne'akar V'Naseh Chalav. It's a position that we mentioned in the introduction to the Masechta. It's what we've spoken about before. The belief that the cessation of menstrual dam when you're nursing is because that menstrual dam is now being turned into milk instead of dam. So that's why there is no menstruation, is because you're nursing. But that means that Rabbi Meir sees a direct correlation between the menstruation and the nursing. The Divrei Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, according to the Chachamim, the dissenting opinion, Evareha mitparkim ve'nefshach uzeret ad 24 chodesh. It's clear that it's a physiological issue, and that is that her recovery takes 24 months, and it's irrespective as to whether she is nursing or she's not nursing. So now, the Gemara goes back and says, the Braita said the fikach, therefore, with regards to Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, according to Rabbi Meir, the lefikach was that if she continues to nurse way beyond the time of 24 months, she'll still be protected. And the Chachamim's lefikach was that if you nurse that long, it doesn't matter because 24 months are 24 months. And the Gemara says about that, the fikach of Rabbi Meir, lamali. The lefikach of Rabbi Meir seems unnecessary because it's obvious. If he says that if you stop nursing, then you have a sighting of dam, then if you continue to nurse, you're not going to have a sighting of dam. It's clear that he correlates the two items, and therefore the fikach is an obvious outcome or result of his position. So why did they write to write it? Yishom lefikach de Rabbi Yossi. It's because of the lefikach of Rabbi Yossi, which is not so obvious. Lefikach de Rabbi Yossi lomali. Why is that not so obvious? Mal detema. I would have thought Rabbi Yossi, tarte itle. He has the later of either 24 months, or the cessation of nursing. Whichever happens later, that's what will be the termination of this protection in terms of dayashata. So you would have thought, if she stops nursing early, you get all the way till 24 months. If she continues to nurse beyond the 24 months, then you also get that benefit as well. So later of 24 months, which is the physiological recovery, or nursing, which would also cause the suspension of the menstrual cycle. Kamash Valon, that's not what Rabbi Yossi is saying. Rabbi Yossi is saying only one threshold, and the threshold is time, 24 months, and that's irrespective of whether you're nursing or not nursing. Tanya Namiyochi, we have a breita that's supportive of this contention, that these are the reasons behind the positions of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Dam Naker Esechalav, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir makes it clear that he thinks that the reason for the suspension of the menstrual cycle is because the dam is being turned into milk, into the nursing mother's production. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ivarea mit parkim, v'nafshach uzer alea ad 24 chodesh. She has gone through physiological trauma. The recovery of that is not complete until 24 months after the birth. Amri Rabbi Eloi, my time with the Rabbi Meir. Where did Rabbi Meir get this idea the dam nekar v'naseh chalav. It's an interesting question only because it was probably empirical. Rabbi Meir is making an assumption. He sees that nursing women don't have a menstrual cycle. So your natural conclusion from that would be that something is happening, that the dam is no longer visible, and there is another liquid that's being produced. So without knowing anything more, you would just assume that the dam that used to come out is now coming out in a different form. And that's why you would say dam nekar v'naseh chalav. That's probably what triggered Rabbi Meir's position. But Rabbi Eloi is searching for a proof text in the Tanakh that would tell us that such a thing is true. It says, "Dichtiv in Iyov, mi tein tahor mi tameh." Who can make something pure out of impurity? Lo echad. It only could be God. So what is something that is tameh, that is converted into something tahor? And so that's what Rabbi Meir says. It is the dam, nida, that is being converted into the chalav, which is now tahor. So that's his source text. V'rabbonon am Rabbi Yochanan, zo shichvat zera. They think that's a reference to the semen, which again, shehu tameh, that in and of itself is tameh, v'adam enotz ar mimenu tahor. But if it results in conception, then the human created from that is tahor. So they see that as something tameh creating something tahor, because they obviously don't agree that dam ne'akar v'naseh chalav. Rabbi Elazar omer, elu me'nida. So Rabbi Elazar says it's a reference to the waters of the Parah Aduma, the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma. Shemazeh umazin alav tahor. The one who does the sprinkling and the one who is sprinkled on is tahor. Vinogeya, and someone who touches them, tameh. So you see here that mi tein tahor, mi tameh. Who is someone who makes that tahor from the tameh? Which means that the liquids, the sprinklings of the Parah Aduma, if any person comes along and touches them, they're tameh. That tameh item, when sprinkled on someone that is tameh, it makes them tahor. So that is the strange phenomenon, that something tameh makes the individual tahor. Umazeh, tahor? So the Gemara is incredulous. The person who does the hazaah is tahor. Doesn't the Torah say just the opposite? Dechtiv. Umazeh me'anida, yichabes begadav. The one who does the sprinkling of the waters of the Parah Aduma requires not only tahara for himself, but he also has metaher his begadim. My mazeh, no geya. Mazeh doesn't really mean sprinkling, it means touching it. V'aktiv mazeh. If he wanted to say nogeya, would it say v'anogeya? The Torah knows how to say to touch. Doesn't need to say a mazeh. V'aktiv nogeya. And beyond that, the Torah explicitly mentions nogeya. So, if you have nogeya, and you have mazeh, it seems clear that mazeh is not nogeya. V'od, mazeh bayi kibus, nogeya lo bayi kibus. If you want to say, okay, the Torah said it twice, just in different ways, the problem is the din is different. By nogeya, only the individual is tamei. By mazeh, the individual and his clothing are tameim. So it's clearly not the same din that we're speaking about. Elamai mazeh, no se. Mazeh is not somebody who touched, but somebody who carried it. Helichtov no se. So again, just very simple. The Torah knows how to say no se. It uses it all the time when it talks about tuma, that a no se nivlata, the one who carries it is going to be tamei. It could have said that here as well. Kamash Malan, da'ad dari kishiur haza'ah. That's what it's teaching you. It's teaching you no say, but it's teaching you that there's a minimum shi'ur of no say to be tameh. That you can't just carry any amount of the liquids of the Parah Aduma. You must carry a minimum amount, and that minimum amount is mazeh. The amount that would suffice to do the sprinkling on an individual. Mazeh zanicha l'man damar haza'ah tzricha shi'ur. That works well according to the one who says that hazar requires a minimum shiur. Lamadamar ain't sricha shiur, ma'ika the meimar. According to the one who says that there is no minimum shiur, any amount of liquid would suffice to do the sprinkling of Parah Aduma. There's not a minimum amount that you need to sprinkle on the individual in order to be mitaher them. Then over here, it's the same thing. There's no minimum threshold that you're speaking about, so why do you need a shiur of mazeh? So Mar says, afilu lamadamar ain't sricha shiur, even according to the one who says there's no requirement of shiur, haini milia gava de gavra. That's what has to reach the individual. The fact that you don't need a shiur is that what gets to the individual, the liquid that gets the individual from the sprinkling, there is no shiur. Any amount that reaches him, that's mitaher him. Aval b'mano, inside the kli, meaning that the liquid you're starting with to do the sprinkling, be'ina shiur, according to everyone, you need a shiur. So there is a minimum shiur to do the sprinkling. The only thing you don't have a minimum shiur about, at least according to one of the deal here, is what reaches the individual you're trying to be mitair. Kid, it's none. Because we have the Mishnah. Kama yu b'mayim v'ebahen k'dei hazah. How much do you need in the waters in order for there to be k'dei hazadah? Meaning that what is considered to be umazet, which is the shiur that we're looking for, k'dei shid bo roshe giv olim v'yazet. Amount that would be sufficient to dip the tops of the rushes into the liquid and then sprinkle it. V'ayinu d'amar Shlomo, and this is about which Shlomo says, amarti ech kama v'hi rechoka mimeni. I thought I would be wise. I thought I would be able to understand the din of paraduma, but it was beyond me. I can't understand it. That is because of the inconsistencies within the din of paraduma, that the one who does the sprinkling and the one sprinkled upon are both tehorim, yet someone who touches the meid nida or carries the meid nida, the waters of the paraduma, will be tmeim. Now, you could ask, well, anybody who has to do the sprinkling has to carry or touch the meid nida. So the differentiation is that only if you touch it or carry it for no purpose, meaning not for the mitzvah, are you tameh. If you are picking it up to do a sprinkling, then you're considered as part of the process of sprinkling and you're not tameh. So that makes it even more complex or strange, which is that even the individual who is doing the mazeh and does both the maybe nigia and nisiyah, he will not be tameh. But someone else who just picks it up for no reason or touches it for no reason will be tameh. That is the paradox of paraduma. Again, it's most times misunderstood, as the Gemara itself even thought in the Hava Mina, is that people think that the one who's getting sprinkled on is tohor, the one who does the sprinkling is tameh, because that's what it sounds like from the Pashtut of Psukim. But based on the Treshot Chazal, that's not the case. Even the one who's sprinkling is not tameh. It's only someone who touches or carries it without a purpose that they are tameh. And that's what the Pasuk was referring to before. Something that makes people tameh can then go ahead and change someone from tameh to tahor. And that's mi tain, tahor mi tameh. Halo echad. Isn't it God who says that the waters of paraduma that make people tameh can be mitaher another individual who is tameh? Ezu is kena. What is considered to be a woman who's reached the point or threshold of menopause? Kol shavra leshloshonot samuch leziknuta. As someone who has an absence of three cycles near the time period where she's classified as a menopausal woman. Hechidami samuch leziknuta. So the obvious question is, what is that threshold? How do we know when you'd expect a woman to reach menopause? Amar Yehuda, kol shechavrotei omerot aleha zekenahi. When her friends say that she's old, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, kol shekorin la, the way we have it in the Gersa is ima ima. The Marasar, the Shas wants to take it out and say only ima once. Korin la ima, veino bosha. They call her ima, and she's not embarrassed. If you have it as ima ima, it really means sabta. That they call her a grandmother, and she's not embarrassed to be called a grandmother. So that's someone who's already reached the age where you could expect menopause. Rabbi Zeir, Rabbi Shmuel, Bar Rabbi Yitzchak, they have a machloket. Chamamar kol sheinu makpedet. She is not stopping people from saying that she is a sabta, that she is a grandmother. Chamamar kol sheinu bosha. The other one says, as long as she's not embarrassed. My benayu. What's the nafkamina between whether she's makpedet or bosha? Ibnayu bosha veinu makpedet. When people say it, she's a little embarrassed, she's a little reticent about it, but she doesn't stop them, she doesn't correct them about it, and therefore that's the nafkamina between these two. Now, what's interesting about this, the Tosafot over here says, Ubishami parich, b'chimidatat huyahadabar. You just made this very subjective. Don't you expect this to be an objective age where a woman reaches ziknuta or menopause? Over here, you've just made it into an extremely subjective matter. It's all about the reaction of the woman. And even in the Tanakama's case, he said when people call her old, that's also subjective because it depends on how people view this individual, and that could be very subjective. There are a lot of factors that could play in, both the people that are saying it as well as the woman who is the object of their discussion. But more importantly, if it has to do with Busha or Makpedet, about what they're calling her, that's very, very subjective, and we don't like subjective thresholds. We, in general, like objective thresholds. When it comes to subjective thresholds, you see a lot of problems. One of those, for instance, is in avelut, whereby a person who is an avel for a parent, they have the right to cut their hair or their beard when people are gorin bahen. When people tell them that you look terrible, that you're disheveled, you got to get a haircut. And you see there where it's a very subjective matter, it's all over the map, both in terms of what people think halakhically when that time period should be, as well as what people do or when they say something to another individual, and it makes it a very, very amorphous type of halakha where there's really no guidance or indication and people do very different things in that matter. And so it's over here, you wouldn't expect that. So Tosfot says in the Yerushalmi, it says, "Mishani kosheru yadikrot ima." He says, not that it's literally when they call her ima, it's when she should be called an ima. It's when she should have that terminology. Again, if you say the word is only ima and not ima ima, ima ima would be sabta, whereas if you only say ima, maybe that's akin to oma in the modern parlance, which is, that is a status. It's someone who's considered to be elderly because of their wisdom, their standing in the family. Doesn't literally mean a grandmother, but it's a terminology that you use for those that are of the older generation. That might be what it is. And then Tosfot is saying about that, that it's an objective standard. It's when she should be called that, even if they don't call her that. And that would then make it a much more objective standard. But obviously the Amoraim afterwards, they talk about Busha and Abakpada, that's clearly not something that is objective. That's clearly subjective over here. All right, so now the Gemara asks about the statement in the Mishnah that she has to have shloshonot, three cycles that pass, in the time period when she could be menopausal. So then the Gemara asks, Kamona, so what is that cycle that she has to miss three cycles of? Amar Reish Lakish, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. So Reish Lakish says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya is an Amora, who is the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And we bump into him in the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, which is very controversial, because he shouldn't be appearing in a Mishnah because he is an Amora and not a Tanon. The Rishonim discuss over there that it was added into the Mishnah. But Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya is the grandson of Rabbi. And then depending on different views, there might be a number of them. There might be another grandson of a grandson, that's also Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. Ona benonit shloshim yom. A standard ona is 30 days. And therefore, she has to wait three cycles of 30 days, which is 90 days. So if she has a cessation of her menstrual cycle for 90 days at the point that she could be menopausal, that would indicate a Mesuleket Damim. Rabba Amar Rav Chista Esrim Yom. 20 days. Velo Blige. And they don't argue. It's pretty hard. One says 20, one says 30. How are they not arguing? Marka Chashiv Yemei Tuma. Vimei Tara. It's clear that Reish Lakish is quoting the entire cycle, which is the days of Tuma, the days of Tara. That's a regular cycle. It's roughly 30 days. Mar Lo Chashiv Yemei Tuma. On the other hand, Rav Chista is not counting the Yemei Tuma. That is extremely difficult because Nida Doraita is 7 days. From the moment she has a sighting of Petach the Nida, she's Tmeya for 7 days. Irrespective of whether she sees the entire 7 days, sees nothing during those 7 days, she's Tmeya for the 7 days. After 7 days, she goes to the mikveh, she's Tora, and she enters into her Yomei Ziva. And as the Baal Yat Tosfot point out, the Gemara later on is going to say, during her Yomei Ziva, she has a Cheska Tara. We don't expect her to see Dam. And even the Torah states it that way, because when she sees Dam during the Yemei Ziva, they say, Velo Eit Nidata, at the time that she's not expecting to be a Nida. And so how do you call those Yemei Tuma? So now, we understand where you get 7 days from. How do you get to 10 days? The way Rashi explains it is, you have 7 days of the Nida, 3 days of Ziva. Because if you have 3 days of sightings during your Yemei Ziva, you turn into a Zava Gedola, and then you need Shiva Nikiim. So 3 days are considered to be significant in terms of Tumah by Yemei Ziva. So I add that to the seven and I get 10 days of Tumah. Tosafot says, Dochu Kumod. I don't understand. The Yemei Ziva are Cheska Tara. Who's talking about 3 days and we're already citing of 3 days? He therefore quotes a girsa that was found in the Rabbeinu Tam of the opinion Rav Chista is Esrim Vishlosha Yom. 23 days. That would make a lot more sense, because then he's only mentioning the Yemei Tahara, and not the Yemei Tuma. He's mentioning only the days that are tahor, 23 days, not Yemei Tumah, which are the 7 days of the Yemei Nidah. The way that we were stating it is that he did not state the Yemei Tumah, which are 10 days, and he only stated the Yemei Tara, which are 20 days, and that is very hard to reconcile with. If a woman has a cessation of the menstrual cycle for 90 days, and then she has a sighting at the end of the 90 days, dayashata, she now only gets prospective tumah, because she is within the time period where we'd expect her to be menopausal, and she skipped 3 cycles. Va'od, avru alash shloshonot, virata. And then she has another 90-day interval, and then she has a sighting again, dayashata. At that point, she still has the same status as being mesuleket tamim, and you only worry about prospective tumah. Va'od avru alash shloshonot. Then for a third time, she has a 90-day interval, virata. And then she has a sighting. Harihi kechol hanashim. She now returns to be like a regular woman. Umitama the 8 to 8 umibkidal bikidia. And then she has retroactive tumah. What has happened now is that instead of it really being a menopausal event that she's stopping to menstruate, all that's happened is that her cycle has changed. Her cycle has widened out. She used to have a 30-day cycle. Now she's changed to a 90-day cycle. So you've changed your vesit. You are not the suleket tamim. And that's why now she is considered tmeyam 8 to 8, because it's no longer suleket tamim. Velo shekivna, ela filo pichta vahutira. Not that she is getting exactly 90 days, but even if she's getting less or more than 90 days. So the Gemara says about that, afilo pichta velo mibayikam kivna. So even if she has less than that, not only that, but then certainly if she had the fixed cycle, adarabba, it makes sense to say just the opposite. Ki givna kavala vesta. When she has the exact same interval, she has a vesit, vidayashata, and she should then have not have the problem of retroactive tumah. V'chi teima rabbonani depligi alei d'Rabbi Dosa. And if you think it's the rabbonan arguing Rabbi Dosa and say that even at Veset Kavua, you have Tumah L'mafreya, Damrei Yisha, Sheish LaVeset, Mitamah Me'et Le'et, they still say there's retroactive Tumah, even in a woman who has a fixed cycle, Ipcha Miboile. Then you should have said just the opposite. V'leima, Lo Shepichta Ba'otira, not only in a case where it was less and more, where it's obvious now that she has to keep checking and she's going to have Tumah Me'et Le'et, Elo Afilu Kivna. Even if she got exactly 90-day intervals, where she now has a really fixed beset, then she would still be tmeya. What the Gemara is pointing out is that there's a statement at the end of the Braita that is hard to make sense of. The Braita says that if she goes from having a regular cycle to having a suspended cycle, then we consider it to be menopausal, and therefore she be selected tamim and dayashata if she has sightings afterwards. But if she for 3 times after that changes to a new interval of 90-90-90, then that restarts her cycling just at a wider cycle. Instead of being 30-day cycles, she's now having 90-day cycles. Given that new reality, the Braita then says something that's strange. And the Braita says, not she kivna, not that she was getting exactly 90-day cycles, but even if she was getting less than 90-day cycles, or getting more than the 90-day cycles. And the Gemara says about that, so afilu pichta, even in a case with less than 90 days, you say this, below mi bayi kavna, and then certainly in the case where you're getting exactly 90-day cycles, then that would be true. Is that really true? Because when you're getting exactly 90-day cycles, you're now in a fixed interval, and you should still be dayashata. Because when you have these odd cycles, then you have Tumah L'mafreya. So Mar says, oh, maybe it's according to the Rabbanan. Well, according to the Rabbanan, who say when you have a fixed cycle, you still check retroactively, you still have Tumah retroactively. According to them, it's still more obvious that you have an odd cycle, and you don't have a Veset Kavua, that you should be checking that you're Tumah retroactively. Then you can't say, certainly, then when you have a fixed cycle, it'd be the other way around. If by a fixed cycle it is true, then certainly by a non-fixed cycle, and the language of the Braita is reversed. And so the answer to the Gemara gives is, Tnei, lo shepichta bo tira. It's not a case, or not only a case, where she has less and more than 90-day intervals, ela filu kivna, even if she has exactly 90-day intervals, and that then would fit the sheet of the Chachamim, which is not only when she has an odd intervals, but even if she has exact intervals, which would be that she is a vesed kavua, she has a fixed cycle, nevertheless, she has to, there is tuma v'mafreya. Bibai teima hachikamar. Others say this is what it's meant. V'lo shekivna, not that she had exactly 90-day cycles, ella shepukhtea v'hotira, but rather she had more or less. Aval kivna, kabbala vesed v'dayashata. If she is exactly 90-day intervals, then it's a fixed veset, and the yeshada, and she would not have to have tuma retroactively. Umani, who's the author of the Braita? Rabbi Dosai, who believes that when you have fixed cycles, you don't have to check, you don't have tuma retroactively. So now, Rashi over here, in describing pichta botira, says that it's a situation in which you have first, the first interval was 90 days, the next interval was 91 days. The next interval was 92 days. It was climbing a day. They were spreading out. Or in Pichta, is that they had an interval that was 90, then 89, then 88. Tosafot says, well, you know, Rashi wasn't so careful because later on in the Gemara is going to have a machloket as to whether intervals that move at a fixed amount are considered to be a cycle. Maybe that in of itself is a veset kavua. 90, 91, 92, 93, it's going to continue, or even it resets. 90, 91, 92, 90, 91, 92. So there can be a cycle like that that's fixed. So Tosafot says, I don't know if Rashi gave the best example, because that may not be the case. Now, Tosafot points out that there is a mandamar later on, that those types of intervals are only true when you're dealing with the month, the day of the month. So that means that you saw on the 15th of this month, the 16th of the next month, the 17th of the next month, but not where there's a gap interval of 90, 91, 92. So according to that, then it'd be fine here, because then Rashi's not giving examples of something that could be considered a veset kavua. The other hand, according to the other opinion, you would have to mix it up a little bit. You would have to say that it wasn't giving you a fixed interval, it was 90, 92, then 93. So there wasn't a pattern to it, because otherwise if there's a pattern, it could create a veset kavua. Now, what we learned from this, Braita, is that if she is musuleket damim and she's at the time where she should be menopausal and she has a skipping of three cycles, then she goes to a standing of dayashata where only there's prospective tuma. That will continue unless she starts to have sightings of dam again. Those sightings of dam can either be at fixed intervals, and if they're at fixed intervals, afterwards you have a machlok between the chachamim and Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa will say that she remains dayashata, she has fixed intervals, or fixed sightings. And the Chachamim will say, veset kavua doesn't matter. Any veset where you have a regular sighting of dam, you're not menopausal, there you have retroactive tuma. And then the other possibility is that after she had this cessation of the cycle for three times, she starts to have sightings. But the sightings are coming at random times. So then she has a veset she'ina kavua. In that case, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Dosa will agree that you have a retroactive tuma every time you have a sighting now. So that's likely what happens around the time of menopause, and that's why the Braita is discussing this, which is you have these false starts of where it seems that the menstruation has been suspended or stopped, but then it comes back. It comes back either at new intervals or it comes back at random intervals, and that's what exactly is being discussed here, that she gets the benefit of the doubt because she's at the age, but if that's undermined by a chazoka, then it will return to its former state. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kosh Isha Shavru Alash Shlosh Onot. This is the machloka that we saw before. That Rabbi Eliezer says that any woman, even if she's not at the age of being ready for menopause, if she has a cessation of her cycle for three periods, then she is considered to be dayashata. Chachamim disagree and say it's only true by an Isha Zakena. Tanya, Amalem Rabbi Eliezer the Chachamim. Maseh Beriba Achat Behetelo. There was an incident with this young maiden in this location. She hafsika shloshonot, that she had a cessation of her menstruating for three cycles. Ba'maseh lifnei chachamim. The chachamim then paskind for her, v'amru dayashata, that there's only prospective tuma now for the sightings that she had. Amru lo, ein shata d'chak raya. That was an emergency situation. That was an unusual case. My shata d'chak. Oh, so unusual about it. It was a young girl. asking you a question. Where do you see anything unusual in the case here? Igadamri shnei batzora tavu. Some say that it was years of famine. And therefore, if we were mitama, if we were to say this girl is tmeya retroactively, that would cause tuma to a bunch of tarot that would then need to be gotten rid of. You'd have to wait for them to come to meim, tolin, and then they'd have to be burnt. You'd lose food. Meantime, they have a famine going on and they can't afford to lose any food over here. So the chachamim in those instances suspended the takana of retroactive tuma because of the fact that it was extenuating circumstances, that it was a time of famine. This is the Baal Yad Tosafot's proof from before, where he said that Rashi claims that the Shadat Chak in the case at the top of Vav Amud Bet claimed that the situation of Kedai Rabbi Eliezer Lismochala B'Shadat Chak, that we can follow Rabbi Eliezer in a Shadat Chak, Rashi says Shnei Betzorah. He says that it's a famine. Obviously Rashi is relying on our Gemara. Tosafot points out that our Gemara doesn't say this only in Rabbi Eliezer. The Chachamim agree in this case. They're the ones who say it's a Shadat Chak, and that's why it was Dayashata. So it's not just the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. And therefore, Tosafot says, Rashi's explanation of Shadat Chak is incorrect. And Rashi then says something else. He says there, B'shnei Betzoret, V'lo Ratza La'asid Tarot. Now, the truth is, over here in our Gemara, the Gemara brings the second answer. Iga Damre, Tarot Afish Lavido. She worked with a ton of Tarot in the last 24 hours. So if they were to uphold the takana, it would be a major loss. Because Rabbanon lehefsei tarot. The Rabbanon worried about large losses of tarot because this would be a big cause. Both hefsei meruba, in the sense that it would be a huge loss, because if they upheld the takana, it would be retroactive to much. It would affect all the tarot that she had worked with. Rashi, interesting enough, when he quotes this back in Vav Amud, says, Shnei batzor davu, v'lo ratza lehefsei tarot. He actually conflates both answers of the Gemara here and puts them together. It's interesting because he brings both answers. And number two is interesting because that's the shita of even the Chachamim and not just Rabbi Eliezer. Then the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan. It brings the incident that we saw back on Daf Avam and Aleph onto Vav Amud Bet that we just spoke about. Masiv Asa Rabbi to Rabbi Eliezer. There was an incident where they came to him, a woman who had had a sighting, and she had suspended or didn't have a sighting for 3 cycles, then suddenly had a sighting, and she came to Rabbi to give her a psak, and he said only prospective tumah, no retroactive tumah. The Chashan Iskar, he remembered that's not the halacha. That the halacha is that she should be retroactively tumeah. Amar, kedayu Rabbi Eliezer lismoka la b'shatat chak. You can rely on Rabbi Eliezer in extenuating circumstances. Maila Chashan Iskar, what did he remember? Ilema lachash niskar den alocha to Rabbi Eliezer. If it was that he remembered the alocha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, elokir rabbanon, but rather like the rabbanon. B'shatatchak, heki avi kabatei. How could he paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, even b'shatatchak? Once you have a definitive psak, the other opinion is if it doesn't exist halachically. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist in terms of limud Torah or understanding, but in terms of alocha, it's no longer an opinion that can't be relied upon. It's no longer an opinion that has any validity within the world of psak. Ella, deloit mariokata lokimar velokimar. It's a case where there was no definitive statement by the Gemara as to who the halacha is like. Umay lachar sheniskar. So then what did he remember? Lachar sheniskar, the lav yachid paligale, el rabim paligale. After he remembered that Rabbi Eliezer was not arguing with another individual, so it was one-on-one, but rather he was arguing on the chachamim. And therefore he was rabim v'yachid halacha ke Rabim. So that's what he forgot about. Amar, in that instance, he said, Gedayu Rabbi Eliezer, Lismokala B'Shatat Chak. That you can't rely on Rabbi Eliezer B'Shatat Chak. Which again, as I mentioned before, when we did this on top of Vavam and Bet, that's very strange because the fact that Aloha Karabim is one of the Klalei Apsak. Why is that different than the fact that the Gemara explicitly paskins like a certain position? So you see from this that there is a difference. When you invoke Klalei Apsak, they're not as rigid or strong as a statement of the Gemara where you say that this halacha is like this opinion. When the Gemara says that, the other opinion becomes invalid in the halachic process. In a situation where we invoke the klalei apsak, the other position still exists. And that has nafkaminot, where many poskim are willing, when they have what's called a tziruf, if they can add together numerous opinions, even though maybe they're minority opinions, they begin to rely on them because they have aggregated a number of minority opinions, whereby we could say maybe here we could be makil. So that would be possible, according to this, where if you're invoking Klali Apsak, and even though normally you would not say that the other party exists when you pass them like one, over there, the other party still exists, never opens up that possibility of utilizing them in a consolidated Psak. Also very true that by the Klali Apsak, they're exactly that. They're Klali Apsak, and we know there are exceptions to them, including what we just saw in yesterday's daf, which is Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, Halacha ke Rabbi Yeshua. Yet we found there were at least four instances, maybe more, where we passed in like Rabbi Eliezer. So that means that the Klali Apsak are not so rigid that you have to say that they're absolute. And if that's the case, they carry a little less weight than a definitive Psak of the Gemara. Right? Tana Banan, Tinoket Shlogi Azmanali wrote, a young girl who is pre-menstruation, she's at a point in time or an age where we don't expect her to have sightings. Verata Pam Rishuna, she has a sighting. Dayashata. We only assume a prospective tuma because we don't expect damim. She's a mislekat damim. Shnia, she sees a second time. Dayashata. Again, we still assume that she is not expecting dam and only prospective tuma. Shlishit, she already sees a third time. Harihi kechol hanashim. She has the status of all women. Umitama mi'et le'et umipkidah v'kidah. And therefore we assume that there is tuma retroactively over here. The Gemara will point out in tomorrow's daf that this is according to the Shita of Rabbi. And that is that there's a machloka between Rabbi and Shimon Gamliel as to how many times you need in order to establish a chazaka. Rabbi believes it's two times. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes that it is three times. Over here, on the third sighting, we're already saying that she has a din of retroactive tuma. That means we establish the chazaka with the first two times. On the third sighting already, she's deemed to be a woman who is not the selected damim. That's like Rabbi, who says you can establish a chazaka after two times. Because if you require three times to establish a chazaka, then this would be the third time, and then only the fourth time would be subject to the din, because the third time establishes the chazaka. Then, avru aleha shloshonot, virata. Then, if she then has three cycles that pass, and then only sees, dayashata. Then she has a cessation of sightings of dam. And only 90 days later does she have a sighting. Then again, she resets to dayashata. Even though for Rabbi, you establish a chazaka in two times, and therefore maybe you'd have to unwind it two times in order for that to be a reversal of what you've established now, because she's in a situation where lo higi hazman le'riyot, we give her the benefit of the doubt and assume that she's not going to have sightings. And therefore, as soon as she reestablishes that non-sighting situation, we give her the benefit of the doubt and say that it's a reset. And she has to reestablish a chazaka of citing dam again. And then again, another 90-day interval, and she has a citing, dayashata. Then a third time, she has a 90-day interval, and virata, and she sees. Then she basically, we're saying now, is that she's not Sulekit Damim. She now just changed the duration or interval of her cycle. It went from a 30-day cycle to a 90-day cycle, similar to what we saw with the menopausal woman before, which is the first two times we assume that it's just a corroboration of Sulekit Damim, and it's an oddity that she's seeing it. Once she does that again a third time, or here it's really two times, which establishes the Hazaka for the third time, then we assume that she's now reestablished a new chazaka or a new cycle. Ukeshi Giazman Ali wrote, when she's already reached the point where we expect her to menstruate, different than the girl here is too young. So in that case, we give her the benefit of the doubt that she's a Musulekat Tamim, unless she proves us otherwise. Over here, when you're dealing with a woman who has reached the age where she will menstruate, over there, we don't give her the benefit of the doubt. And therefore, Pamri Shona Dayashata, the first time she cites, we assume it's prospective Tuma, because it's the first time. Already at the second sighting, we assume that it's regular cycling now because we expect her to have a menstrual cycle. If she then has a suspension for three cycles and then sees dayashata, then that's enough to reset it to prospective. It's like the first time she saw it. Now, this is clearly only true according to Rabbi Eliezer. We saw just before the machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim that if you have a slikud damim, a 90-day suspension of the cycle when you're not menopausal, Rabbi Eliezer says that's the same as the zikena, and you only are dayashata. The Chachamim say no, only by menopausal women is that true. But by a regular woman who has a 90-day window where she doesn't see, doesn't matter. She's not considered mislaka tamei. As soon as she cites again, there is retroactive tuma. This braita, as the Gemara will say tomorrow, is clearly according to Rabbi Eliezer, because it says here, she has a suspension for 90 days, then tayashata, she goes back to being prospective tuma, and that's only according to the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, we're going to stop here on the last line of Tet Amud Bet.